Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West. Episode number 34.5, and our maturity, we no longer have our issues. Yes. So we are now episodic.
We've graduated past issues.
Yes.
Is that okay?
We only have existentialism now.
We only have back issues now.
Oh my god. Well, that one was...
That is the smashing of my computer on the floor.
That one... That
and
one,
then silent sobs because I just paid it off.
That one was too good for us, Nat.
I actually now think that our archive should be called Back Issues.
Oh god.
Anyway.
Yeah. It'll be Old Man Podcast. Back Issues.
Alright.
Anyway,
where are we at?
Why don't you start us off with some issues, Nat?
Okay, I have Thor numero 6, written by Jason Aaron.
We're also
Mark
bilingual
Bailey.
Now.
Nice Spanish. Yep. Picked up some new tricks over the years.
You're right.
¿Qué? written by Jason Aaron with art by Christian Ward, billed as the guest artist because he's only doing this little arc. This is a continuation of the King Thor, basically God Thor, who relights the world and restarts humanity, and it's fucking awesome because we're still dealing with Old Man Phoenix, and Old Man Phoenix sacrifices himself and the Phoenix Force to take down a super overpowered version of Doom, and they put the Phoenix Force in Mjolnir.
What?
So the hammer has the Phoenix Force, and then when Thor grabs it, he becomes the mighty Thunderbird, King Phoenix, God of Fire.
Is that, like, what it's gonna be now, then?
I was hoping that there was a car underneath him at some point.
No, this is so far into the future, like, literally the world is dead, and Thor has made the decision to, like, restart humanity as God.
Okay.
So, yeah, this is just one of those, Jason Aaron must just have these ideas, and he knows he's got one shot at it, so he's putting everything into the book. I think that Thor's, this epic that Jason Aaron has done since, 2012, every aspect of it is worth reading, and this is no exception. I'm going to move into a little Justice League Odyssey of myself, but we're going to start with Justice League number 10. There's a pun there, and I'm sorry that I'm full of puns today. Justice League number 10, written by Scott Snyder. With
things to break, Matt.
Don't break my coffee mug. It's gluten-free. Sorry. This is written by Scott Snyder with art by Francis Monopole. The only reason I picked this up is because I love Monopole's art, and this is the beginning of the Drowned Earth storyline. And they're dealing with deities coming from another world and drowning the Earth, quite literally. And Aquemen wakes up, and he's getting a visage of three gods from other worlds, like the equivalents of... like Poseidon from different universes, and the invasion has already started. Like, the world is pretty much on the brink of ending, and all of this is a result of the source wall being broken. And the art's incredible. Like, it's just such a really, like, cool look. This is going to lead into where the new Aquaman title is going to go, with him just sort of waking up on an island and new shit happening. Speaking of gods, we have Justice League Odyssey number 2, written by Joshua Williamson with art by Stjepan Sejic. I believe this is his last issue on the book for a little while because of the weird redraws. This is just great. This is great cosmic stuff. It's Darkseid trying to manipulate everybody from a different angle, and the trio of Starfire, Cyborg, and Azrael being viewed as gods in other worlds. It's also the greatest depiction of Starfire I've ever seen. It rivals classic George Perez, the way that he does the hair. This is just it's a tour de force in art. It's great to deal. I love, like, god mythology and, like, the idea of different races that have visited the Earth and misconstrued as sort of a god race. So, yeah, super fun, super cosmic. I mean, it's called Odyssey for a reason. So, yeah. I love this.
I like him. Nat's flipping through the book, and he comes to a page, and he kind of like did a little jump as he's going through it. Yeah. Like
he hasn't already read it or anything. I'm just saying.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kat, what do you got for us? A couple quick hits.
All right. My turn. So super quickly, we've got. I guess we've got. This will be actually super simple then. Sleepwalker number 2, written by...
Notes!
Yeah.
I have notes, but I need to clean stuff up. We've got by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims, and then the artist is Todd Newick, I believe. Newark?
Todd Knock.
Todd Knock, cool. God damn, I hate names.
Visual artist from Young Justice.
Yeah, go you. Oh, that explains probably why I like it so much. So he's in the Power Stone, and it looks like in order to progress, so the whole point of the story is he's in within the Infinity Stones that I guess are now linked. And he has to go through all the Infinity... He has to go through pretty much all the Infinity Stones to get to the Soul Gem. He's the first one to issue it through the Reality one. Now he's in the Power Gem. And then he's going to go to Space Time. Blah, blah, blah.
That sounds like an amazing plot for a video game that I would really want to play.
I'd be game. So apparently he has to take on somebody in the Power Stone, which I don't know who this is supposed to be.
Dynamis? I have no idea who that is.
I don't know if it's like...
looks very much like Adam Warlock to me.
I don't know if it's a combination of heroes or not, or he's just some kind of deity within the Power Gem. So he has to fight him, so he brings the little monster with him, which is Scott Pym and Bruce Banner.
And little monster?
And the angrier he gets, the smaller he gets.
I thought you were making a joke.
No, no, this is real.
The little monster, that's the greatest name for a superhero ever.
Well, his arch nemesis is... Egghead and someone else.
Oh man!
And
nice.
The little mom. I'm sorry.
I don't know. I can't think of who his name is, but yeah. So he has to go. He ends up waking. The whole point of this is Sleepwalker only exists in dreams. So he has to. They wake him up. Another team wakes him up to say, "Hey, I need you to do this with this other guy."
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Sleepwalker is left to his own devices of getting his ass kicked.
Nice.
So, I mean, I thought it was really interesting. I liked it. Seeing him travel through the other Power Stones, but I will say this, the little monster made it great, because he's, like, weird.
I'm sorry, that name.
Return of Wolverine number 2. I'm not sure where this is going. I'm not sure where it's going. And I will say this, do not drop fucking random-ass love stories in my comics when you are literally the second issue in. That fuck off!
Wolverine. He's been around for a while.
Don't do that. It's dumb.
Who wrote and drew that one?
Oh, yeah, because that's right. They changed artists, didn't they?
Yeah, I believe it's Declan Shelvey did the art on the book. I don't remember who's writing it, though.
No, it's for the same artist, then.
No, Declan Shelvey didn't do the first one.
I don't remember.
Joshua Middleton did the first one.
And then Charles Soule?
Oh, I don't know how to pronounce this. I've always said Charles Soule.
What is it?
Soule with an E.
There's not a hyphen on it.
Soule, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my big thing is I also want to know when these fucking claws are going to come to play because he does actually like ghastly with them.
Nice!
So it gets a little bloody and hot.
Phoenix!
Hot.
So I will say that. Otherwise, I liked it. Don't drop random ass love stories and shit though like that. Stupid. And then The Life of Captain Marvel number 4. The finale is being pushed back a month, which is slightly irritating considering what you learn in this entire series.
Okay.
So, and I don't want to...
I missed reading that one.
I don't want to spoil it for you, because I know you want
to... Who's that by again?
I think it's... Is it Jane?
Oh, yeah, I forget.
Oh, no, it's Margaret Stoll, and then...
That's right.
Carlos...
Pachaco.
Pachaco for present day, and then for flashbacks, it's Erica...
Oh, man. D'Uribo?
That's
D'Uribo?
D-U-R-S-O.
Oh, it's an S. I'm sorry. D or so.
Yeah, I'm not. If you want to tell me how to pronounce your name, I would greatly appreciate it.
Come on the show and tell us how to pronounce your name.
Yeah, seriously. But, I mean, it looks like they're setting up Captain Marvel to basically rewrite her backstory of what she actually is.
Nice.
So,
just in time for the movie.
Well, no, they're also coming out with a comic. She's going to get her own.
Yeah, she's getting an ongoing.
I don't know.
Really good art writer on that. And I can't remember if it's Kelly Sue DeConnick or
Kelly Thompson.
It's Kelly Thompson. It's the other Kelly.
Yeah,
the
other Kelly.
Kelly.
Cool. Well, Kelly. With that, let's see. I have a couple quick hits myself. This first one is Old Lady Harley, issue 1 of 5.
That has to be making fun of every old man comic that Marvel has put out.
Yes, obviously. And this Frank Tier, writer and artist by Inaki Miranda.
What a great name, by the way.
Inaki
Miranda.
Yeah. It's a good name.
It's
a good name.
Where I'm like, God darn names I can't pronounce.
So I picked this up mostly. I'm not too big of a Harley Quinn fan, but I was like, it's a 5-issue miniseries. DC's miniseries have been pretty good so far. It started out really interesting, and then it got terrible. Like, I don't care about this.
That's what I've bumped into with a lot of Harley Quinn stuff, is it flatlines at the end.
Yeah, and that's definitely what it feels like. The art in this is great, and, like, all the character designs for, like, this sort of dystopian futuristic stuff is they're all really cool. The Red Tool is in it too, which I was over him when he was first introduced. You've never seen the Red Tool? He's literally just a straight up ripoff of Deadpool, which is like.
Is he the one who throws saw blades?
Yeah, he has like, you know, a lot of.
Oh yeah, he does.
Red Tool. I get it.
Yeah, Red Tool rhymes with Deadpool, and he's a tool, and I hate him instantly. So the fact that he was a major player in this story made me instantly lose any interest in it. And so, bored. I'm not going to finish the rest of this 5-issue series. Something that I will finish, though, is Black Panther versus Deadpool, written by Daniel Kibblesmith and art by Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. So, this right here, first off, Ortiz's art is just beautiful. Like, the line work, the dynamic, like, fight scenes.
I don't know why I didn't subscribe to that.
The jokes are actually hilarious in this. Like, I feel Deadpool, like, tries too hard a lot of the time.
Doesn't he greet him with an Hakuna Matata?
Yeah, so the first time he goes into the Wakandan throne room, he says, "Hakuna Matata, your majesty." And Shuri's there, and he says, "My god, that's the worst thing he could say." And then Black Panther's response to that is, "Give him time." And they actually, like, start out with, it's interesting, they have this, like, Wakandan technology or whatever that they started out with, and it actually, like, he actually cuts off Deadpool's arm, and it doesn't grow back.
Oh, that's awesome.
With, like, this field medic device that they were trying to develop. Deadpool sits there and explains how superhero team-ups work with them. He's like, first, what is it, we're gonna have a small misunderstanding, then there's gonna be a big fight, and then some mutual threat is gonna show up, and then we're gonna have to work together. Like, well, let's just skip to the part where and that doesn't happen, and so Deadpool just, like, tries to fight it. He's like, here's the small misunderstanding, and Black Panther just instantly, like, shuts him down. Like,
that's hilarious.
Like, Deadpool versus Black Panther, that's not a fight.
did Deadpool draw the smiley face on his mask, or is that just...
Yes, so he actually, like, right before he's like, I have to, like, put a good face on before I go to Wakanda, so he's in there, and he has a Sharpie, and he draws a smiley face onto his mask.
Complete tangent. I think that should be a permanent design change.
I mean, it works. And then, like, there's actual little flashes in it because it shows, like, a little emoji for his face, like, what's under
the mask. Oh, that's hilarious.
At different times.
Well, I might actually have to give this a read. It's coming with, like, a high pedigree that people are saying really positive things about this book.
I mean, it opens up with and T'Challa's being, like, the best king possible to, like, everyone, like, so good. And then, And then Deadpool's like, we get it, he's a good king, but now to me. And he's driving a school bus full of children while he's reading a book.
Oh, my God.
From now on, it's just a Hakuna Matata.
All right. That's the worst possible thing you could have said. Give it time.
Yeah. All right. So, I've got another couple set of quick hits here. Infinity Warp Soldier Supreme. This is written by Jerry Duggan with art by Adam Kubert. Not to be confused with Andy Kubert, his brother. Awesome. Just a really fun, you know, part of these Infinity Warp storylines. It's the combination of Captain America and Doctor Strange. I think his name is Steven Rogers.
Yes.
With Steven Rogers.
But with a PH. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is like, they reveal the eye of, it's not Agamotto in this, it's...
I don't know.
Isn't that Mr. Rogers' name?
Maybe.
Isn't his actual name Steve in real life, or am I just
That's
making
awesome.
That up?
Nobody knows.
But this is, the coolest part of this whole thing is that by using this eye, he's able to be revealed that the universe he's in is not real, and that it's a combination universe. So, he's trying to answer the call to try to save the Infinity Gems from Gamora. So that was, you know, really interesting. Beautiful art. If you've never seen the Adam Kubert book, you really should, you know, take a look. And then I have MCMLXXV number 2, otherwise known as 1975 number 2, written by Joe Casey with art by Ian McEwan. You were correct last time we discussed this.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, it's definitely the Irish name. I still love this. This deals much more with Pamela's backstory and why she is okay with all these monsters. She actually gets ripped from her taxi as a kid and basically taken into the underworld to become a champion of these worshippers that need her to be fighting the demons. She's basically become the hero of myth, and she has to be the warrior of it. And she happened to have a tire iron with her in the car, so that's what got imbued with the magical energy.
Oh.
So yeah, so it deals with her, you know, like fighting her way through the hordes of hell and like being sort of remorseful and resentful of the fact that this is what her childhood was. But yeah, giant monsters. It's a really small story within a really gigantic story, and I dig it. I love this book.
Going on with like the ancient Greek themes or whatever, were you getting that kind of stuff from like, you know, going to hell or whatever? Like,
yeah.
Was there sort of, I can imagine that.
It was like the trials to get through the levels of hell.
Oh, so she had kind of like Herculean trials.
Yeah, and definitely. Then, and they even designed, like, she's wearing some sort of, looks like a sweater, but the way it's depicted almost looks like chainmail armor on her. So there's like, even an element of trying to pay homage to that.
That's interesting.
So yeah, the monster designs are great. It's just a fun book to read, and the art is just a tour de force of motion and beauty. It's a really just, it's a sad story too. I don't want to spoil the ending of this, because I think this is one of those books that's going to be, it's going to be weird to see on shelves, but people should really pick it up. And then something that I completely did not like is, what if Marvel Comics went metal with Ghost Rider? I picked this up because of the artist. This is written by, I can't get the first name. I think it's Simon Gerner. I'm usually really good with this. But the art is by Casper Wingard, and that was the reason I picked it up. And, yeah, this sucked. This was definitely not for me. It was a satire on, like, going to Marvel Studios and a band being really excited to be there and wanting their blood to be put into the ink of their comic book. And, yeah, it sucked. It was garbage. It was a whole, like, nothing happened.
So I guess what if Marvel went metal with Ghost Rider? The answer is you get a really bad comic book.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And I don't want to waste more time. Anyway.
Cool. Well, what do you have for us, Kat?
Yeah, my turn again. So I have Weapon Hex, which was a lot better than I thought it was going to be, because I originally wasn't going to get it. And I'm like, you know what? We'll try it. I don't really know the origins of... Hell is her name? Scarlet Witch. This is the confusing part, because I just want Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. Yeah, that's
what.
Those are the writers.
Those are the writers.
Ben Acker and Ben Blacker. Okay.
Yeah, try. Yeah, that one.
Oh, and the penciler is Gerardo Sandoval with inks by. It looks like two different inkers. Yep. We have Victor Nava and Gerardo Sandoval. Oh, he inks himself at the part. So
yeah, it looks like he just had some help. Probably is what it was, because this is actually a pretty like colorful book, honestly. So I don't know the origins of Scarlet Witch very well, and I don't know the ones of War very well, but like seeing baby Weapon Hex is adorable.
Yeah.
So they're trying to create the perfect weapon for, or perfect inhabitant for some sort of spirit, and so she's like, oh, it can't be perfect. That makes sense.
Yeah.
She has little baby claws.
Oh, it's so cute.
So you get to see her growing up, and it looks like Sabretooth. I don't know who Sabretooth is combined with, but I'm pretty sure this is Sabretooth combined with somebody.
Yeah. That's a beautiful design.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, most of it's pretty, it's all pretty great. In the very end, and it made, this is the whole reason it made me want to read this, and I don't, it just, to get to this part, you'll be happy I said, but the last character... She finds out she has a sister, and her name is... She says, call me Speed Weasel.
Speed Weasel, which definitely looks like it's a combination of Quicksilver and Honey Badger.
Yep.
Honey Badger. Oh, my gosh. Yes, that's who that is.
The Speed Weasel.
The Speed Weasel.
So I think just for that in its own, you should read the first issue so you're ready to read about Speed Weasel
I might have to pick that up after seeing that one.
It was so cute. Most of it was pretty adorable. Like I
that
said,
has to be the next crossover.
Baby Weapon Hex. It's great. It's adorable. And then I picked up Nightwing number 51, and it was just on the fact that I read that they're trying to change his character. He is no longer Dick Grayson, he is Rick Grayson after having the side of his head blown out. And now he has vertigo and some other ailments. I forgot what the other one is. I'm not really sure where this is going. It looks like there's a cop who ends up finding his stuff. And it doesn't look like it's really going much of anywhere. See, Scott Lobdell, and then, oh my goodness, that's an additional script? Okay, plot and additional script. This is confusing. This is where I lose my mind.
Fabian, I can never say his name right. I think it's Nicheza.
Sure. And then it looks like Travis Moore and Gary Brown are the artists. But you have one of the cops who ends up finding his stuff, and it looks like he doesn't quite remember his past or anything as well, so he doesn't know who Batgirl, Robin, anybody is. I'm going to read the next couple, but...
Oh, this is the first issue that they've completely, basically fired the writer and put a new writer
book. Oh, really? Why?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I think there's a creative direction that DC doesn't know where Nightwing is going.
Oh,
and honestly, after reading this, I could see that because it looks like they're going in some interesting areas. I'm not super sure where, but I picked up the next couple to see where it was going, and I'm not super... I don't know. I'm interested. They have my attention for now. Let's see how long it lasts. And then the final one is Batman and Justice League. This is the fun part. Story and art by...
Oh, God. Okay.
I got this. Shuri... Hold on. Let me get closer. Shuri Teshirogi.
What he said.
Yes. I'm also fairly positive. It's also female, too. So I found that really... She did really, really well for... making me feel like she's holding a cat in her picture. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
So for a manga, I also felt like I was reading a regular Western comic. It was really weird.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
Yeah, is it a good or a bad
thing?
I don't
know. All of the character designs are very well done. Like, they all have their anime-esque, but they still keep kind of their Western philosophy in a way. Everybody says that they like the Joker, but I don't like his shading around his mouth is probably why it weirded me out a little bit. But this story also takes place right after Jason Todd dies. Like it's I don't know if it gave me a time frame, but it's relatively soon after it. I mean, you get pictures of Jason Todd.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm not. This is really good. The plot line is I don't even know, and I don't even halfway care sometimes. But it's like mystical Japanese stuff.
Nice.
And American stuff. Ta-da.
The nice. Real question we all have about this one is: are the proportions for Superman more logical in the book than they are on the cover?
Yes. What do you mean the proportions?
Okay. Yeah, because look.
Nope. He still has a baby head.
He has a tiny baby head.
Yeah. he does have baby head.
Made me think of Thor Ragnarok. Baby arms.
Baby arms.
But, I mean, at the very end, she even gave us character designs for all of the characters that it looks like are going to be in this. So.
That almost gets me to read it by that alone.
Nice.
So, I really enjoyed this. I mean, for...
Is it a standalone, or is there going to be more issues?
There's going to be another one, just on the ending that I saw, because at the very end, like, near... Lex Luthor makes an appearance, and there's no way he's not going to be in more of these. So, like I said, with all the character designs, she has character designs that I didn't even see. So,
character designs for days.
For days.
Cool. Well, with that, you want to jump into our first crossover cat?
Yeah, you go.
Okay.
Crossover cat?
Crossover cat.
Awesome name for a satirical character for in a comic book.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That definitely sounds like a one-off, like, supervillain that would be in a Squirrel Girl issue.
I was thinking maybe a one from Gwenpool.
Oh, yeah.
Crossover cat.
That's true. That too. True. All right.
You go ahead, and just reading the author's name, or the artist's name, I have a feeling I know exactly what went wrong.
Oh, yeah, cool, because they're also Japanese, too. So
are they really?
Yeah.
Gurihiro. So this is art by Gurihiro, which is actually a three-artist collective, I believe. And
the writer?
Then it's writer Jeremy Whitley.
I know exactly what went wrong.
So,
And by that note, you can tell that it's not exactly, this probably won't be a very favorable one. Because somebody made me think about it for a little while.
Huh?
it's not going to be a favorable review. Actually made me think
about it. Oh, my gosh. We came in and Kat and I had read this and we started talking about it.
It was a shrug for me.
Initially Kat was a meh and I was a strong dislike.
So why? What's going on?
So, do you want to get into your meh, or should I get into my strong dislike first?
Your strong dislike is on the right one.
So, the reason that I didn't like this entire comic is just because the character introductions are what we talk about is wrong with diversity in comics.
Yep. Oh.
So this, I knew what I was getting into because it says girl twice, it says Unstoppable Wasp, The Agents of Girl, and there's another one in the back, and I know, like, girls are a thing. I was like, I knew it was going to have that aspect, but it literally puts all of the members of her team, when it's introducing them, it introduces them by their race, and, one of them's gay, and it's like, Priscilla Smith, world-class physicist, snazzy dresser, tiny gay disaster. There's someone else, who is it? Tina Miranda, Puerto Rican engineer, robot maker, grumpy mechanic. Priya Agarwal, biologist, daughter of Indian immigrants, fashionable. This is just the first few pages when it's introducing main characters. And that right there, I'm like, it just completely pulls me out of the story because it's trying way too hard right off the bat.
Once you read, to once be completely you, once you unnecessary. Announced the writer, it made me think about it. I think it's.
Yeah.
And I don't know this for fact, but seeing that it's a male writer writing an all-girl book,
yes,
it could make. And sense
I did look.
To me.
I did actually look him up just to make sure what race he was. I think he is like, I think he might actually be Hispanic if I'm correct.
If you're writing an all-girl book, it's.
Yeah, but it's just
for a younger girl audience too.
And I get it; it's like we're trying really hard to be empowering for young females.
It's one of those
all colors or whatever.
Well, it's not even that. It's to me like the whole message of this book was girls can do science too, and I'm like, if you want to.
But if you want a girl science book, go over and read Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur. There's a reason that that's been going on for over. You know, it's issue 36 at this point.
Yeah.
So, there's a reason that that's been going on. But, and Unstoppable Wasp has been stutter starting, like, every few years.
Yeah, that's true, actually. It just got canceled and then sort of redone.
Yep.
But yeah, that's basically what this is. Girls can do science, too. And I'm like, if you want. It doesn't matter, honestly. So, I understood what you said. And yep. I think it was because I took it at face value of just... very young girls kind of thing, young girl audience.
Yeah, so
probably what it was.
I personally would not read it if you feel like you want to heavy-handedly empower your young girl to do science. Then this might be the book for them.
For me, whatever. If I ever have a daughter, I would never want her to read something like that. Be like, but mom, she's Indian. I was like, who cares?
I don't know. Like I said, if I had a daughter, I'd give her Moon Girl. And Squirrel Girl and Miss Marvel and all the other ones that I read. Anyway.
Everything else. What that comic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'm thinking to myself, like, all of my superhero ones that I follow are female leads. Right. But I'm just like, this one, too female. Too much.
You hurt me.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Nat, you want to jump over to our crossovers?
Sure. We will talk about Teen Titans issue number 23, written by incoming Adam Glass with art by Bernard Chang.
His name is awesome.
Adam Glass, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the art, though, that just is killer in this book, too. So this deals with the fact that Roundhouse isn't dead. And he just kind of took a long time to get back home and then decided he didn't think the Titans would care.
Yeah, that was actually kind of sad because Kid Flash goes there and,
yeah. You
know, he's like, why didn't you come back? Why didn't you warn us? And he's just like, because you guys wouldn't care. Why? I'm stupid.
Yeah.
And...
That's sad.
Yeah, it was kind of sad, but... Like, there's a little sad pause in the rest of this, like, crazy action-packed.
Oh, my God, yeah. And this is, like, a crazy action-packed issue. And it's all about character relationships. Like,
yeah.
he's hiding the fact that, like, really we're sort of figuring out these teens figuring out each other, and there's a weird relationship that's started in a form between Robin and Jin that is...
Borderline feelings.
Yeah, and neither one of them really want to address that fact. And I think it's hilarious to do this for those two characters, because Damien's an old soul, and Jin is literally
an old soul.
So, like...
But she's young at heart. But she's young at body.
Yeah. So, it's really, like, this is a fun book. This is kind of, it's a screwed up book, too.
I love Crush's, reactions to, like, them, like, talking to each other. Right? She's in the back, like, God, kill me right now.
Yeah, Bernard Chang is absolutely destroying on this book. The emotions that each of the characters have in their faces. Like, I'm just looking at near the final page. Robin is doing this thing with his face where he's like, what the hell? Yeah. And you can see it in his, like, the crinkle of his nose.
Dude, the mouths in this, especially, yeah. Robin and Red Arrow and Crush, like, all of their, like, mouth lines or whatever you want to call it, what have you. I feel like I'm saying the word mouth too much, and it's, like, sounding really weird now.
Their food hole lines.
Their food...
let's make it worse.
The thing you smile with and frown with, he does really good smiles and frowns.
he does really good expressions, I think is what we're attempting to say. Also, what the hell are Roundhouse's powers? Because, like, he can, like, change the energy output of his molecules, because he does that weird sparking thing.
Yeah, I'm not really entirely sure what his are. I'm assuming we're going to get more explanation. Same with Jin.
Yeah.
Like, because we just found out in this that she can change shape because she poses...
Oh, yeah, the Commissioner Gordon thing.
...to get assassinated.
Yeah.
Which, God. Great in media res. We were talking about that a little bit in the last episode, starting right in the middle of the action.
Read this book.
Yes.
I think, like, yeah.
At least with the new team. I don't know how the old team was.
I don't know. This feels fresh to me. Like, it really, really does.
Yes. There's a reason it makes it to the top of my stack every time it's there.
All right. Well, I'm going to move on to Infinity Warp's Arachnite number one. This is written by Dennis Hopeless with art by Ale Garza and Victor Olazaba.
It's going to be a hard name to go through. Like, I was just like, this week, for some reason, names are just like insane.
Yeah, this was super fun. This was.
It made me want to read
Moon Knight.
Yeah, it made me want to read Moon Knight because that was.
Yeah.
Dear goodness.
I actually have one negative, and the negative is the reason I picked up the book to begin with is the fact that Ale Garza is doing the art, but his inker is really not doing a service to his pencil lines.
Because he fades them out with all of his inking?
It just got flattened. Like, it really... It became too clean, and Garza's stuff in the past, when it's sketchy and messy, is so much more dynamic, and I'm a fan of Ale Garza from Ninja Boy, which is an old Top Cow title. So, I was really excited to read this, and I really enjoyed myself.
I really liked it. Who the heck is Mary Jane combined with?
Oh, I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, he said her name.
But yeah, so this is the, like, the warps, so it's like the combination character.
Marley Jane?
Oh.
Yeah.
Could be a character from Moon Knight.
Probably, since I don't know who it is. But yeah, it made me want to read Moon Knight is basically what it did, because the multiple personality thing is...
It's also fun every time you read, like, a Batman character with powers, like the vigilante that has, like, extra stuff to it.
Yeah.
So. Well, that's the other thing, is I think they even say they have a Batman in this. It's one of the first supervillains he fights.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the vampire dude combined with somebody.
Oh, it's Morbius with somebody.
Yeah, it's Morbius with someone.
But yeah, there's a whole, like, it's basically a Batman fight, because he's, you know, running around throwing his, spider shuriken stuff.
I guess that would be a spider shuriken. That's fair. That's a fair statement.
Alright, you want to lead us off on this one then, Kat?
I swear to God, if no one, you should be reading this as well, which is Mighty Morphin Power Rangers number 32. We've got Marguerite Bennett. I miss you for Batwoman. And, oh my gosh, I think his name...
Simone DeMio?
Yeah, I think that's who it is. I just have the front
with
cover.
With ink assistances.
I just know it's Marguerite Bennett who's writing off the top of my head.
I want more of the purple
Broken
Ranger cosmic lady.
Well, here's the thing. The theory that I got out of this comic, and I'm fairly certain that I'm right, is I think I said this before even, is I'm fairly certain that this, wherever they are, this is like the cast out universe. They erase themselves from their own universes when they did everything. Because the character who is the Yellow Ranger from
Zio Ranger, yeah.
I'm fairly, she's the Yellow Ranger that took Trini's place.
Oh, okay.
And I'm fairly certain with the existence of getting rid of that Tommy, it got rid of the Ninja Slayer. So that's why, and then you see you get to know who the bad guys are in this one. And the end reveal, I'm fairly certain I know who that is. I'd be shocked if I was wrong.
Ooh, okay.
So, I think basically these characters eliminated themselves from their universe somehow. How some of them got eliminated, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the two that scream to me that are the Yellow Ranger from Zio and the Ninja Slayer. And then, of course, the final character that I see at the very end.
I also really like the blue, like, Dino Ranger that's in here.
Yeah, I think that's, like, Dino Recharge or Dino Charge or something.
Yeah.
I know a lot about Power Rangers.
This is a super action-heavy, like, sci-fi space.
Which is really surprising that I like it as much as I do. Yeah.
It's super fun.
It's probably because I'm like, Power Rangers!
It's like the Thor Ragnarok of Power Rangers. Like, it's crazy.
I would agree with that statement. That's a fair statement.
Nerds.
Are you going to talk about Batman Beyond before?
Sure, yeah.
We'll do a quick little thing on Batman Beyond before we move to some final
reviews.
It was
awesome, and I didn't think I would like it as much as I did. I saw shiny cover and new stories, and I'm like, okay!
Yeah. Joker's back!
DC and their shiny covers this week.
This month, yeah.
So
who wrote and drew this one? Because I know I know the artist. Oh, Cully Hamner was the artist on the book.
I like
how
this
is the
Oh, okay. Marco Santucci, but written by Dan Jurgens.
Yeah.
I like how there's a shiny ad on the back, too.
Yeah, right? This was probably my favorite page of the entire comic, was the flashback to one of Robin's first encounters. Dick Grayson Robin with the Joker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like it was supposed to be the first time they had
met. One of the first encounters he ever had with him and the first time he was ever scared.
Nice.
And the artwork in this book is fucking awesome.
Cully Hamner is one of the main character designers through DC Comics. He's usually the one who goes through and does the final pass on designs.
And so now Batman that's right now, Batman Beyond, he has a Robin, which is
his brother, Maddie,
which is even more awesome because the Robin in this is super awesome looking too.
Yep.
Is it Robin Beyond?
Sure. but yeah, Joker, turns out Joker's alive and he's killing all the Jokers who are using his name.
Optimistic Batman.
Heck yeah.
He's like, no, seriously, like Bruce Wayne is very like...
Like, it's like this shit right here that I'm like, how is this not awesome?
Yeah, this is a book that is celebrating the legacy of DC. And I mean, we've talked about it so much. That was the big joy of Rebirth, was legacy means something. Yes.
So it's just all of this whole comic, like, honestly, I'm now reading Batman Beyond. If they change writers and artists, I'll probably be like, no, I don't want it.
Bernard Chang used to be on that book, though, and no offense to Cully Hamner, but Chang is, well, we just talked about him, so.
I mean, that's fair. I think if they change after this, I'll be like, no, get it out of my face.
It's got to have that sort of, like, beautiful anime style.
I want to read the ones before because of... They even say, oh, Joker's dead, and they, like, reference the second issue.
The first,
like,
two volumes, one with Damian as one of the villains is...
Oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah.
Sweet, I'm game. See, now I'm in. Now I'm hooked.
All right, well, I guess it's time for our trios.
Yay! All of us. What should we start with first?
I think what's in your hand.
Okay, cool. Well, coincidentally, it's in my hand right now. So, this is, What If Thor Was Raised by the Frost Giants?
Woo-hoo.
Written by Ethan Sachs and art by Michael Bandini?
Yeah, it's a
I don't
D.
like...
It's
oh, that's
I had
a
to,
D.
I had to look at the front cover to figure that out.
The font...
Because it looks like
the,
it...
The
it
font on
like
the first
O.
page, I hated this font. Sorry. Just
well, yeah.
a personal thing.
Well, yeah, because it looks like an O.
It does. I really enjoyed this. I didn't think I was, and I kind of just picked it up because it was recommended by a friend.
I'm actually surprised you liked it.
Yeah. I'm surprised that y'all were, like, mad
Out of
about
comparison
it.
To the other two that I've read, I was like, what? Eh.
So what's the premise like?
So the basic premise is: what if Odin lost to the Frost Giants, and then
what's his name?
Laufey.
Yeah, he adopts Odin, or he not Odin. He adopts his, Thor, and
his whole point is to raise him in spite of Odin.
Yeah, he raised and Loki too, and he has Hera in a prison cell basically for all of eternity, and and he's basically he's raising Thor sort of in spite, but then he sees the potential, and so he basically makes him like Winter Thor. What does he even calls himself at some time? The Prince of Winter, I think.
Oh, that's cool.
And
I don't remember. That's how literally little I cared about it.
You didn't like this? Thor kills Freya, his mom, and then turns full blue from wielding this ice hammer, and there's a lot in here about identity, what your identity as a person.
I guess the problem I had with it is it literally had they all lived happily ever after ending, and that's probably why I was I don't
care. What are you talking about? It's they're the frost giants and they live happily. He kills his mom, and I'm pretty sure Loki dies too.
No, he's in the end.
Oh no, yeah,
he leaves him that little wooden totem thing. So he knows where he is, and
he gives it to him, and then he's
smiling, and I'm just like, what is this?
I did forget about that last little tag there.
Well, I mean, it is a one shot, so sometimes
I know, but in comparison to the other two that I read, it was still kind of somewhat open ended, and I was okay with the sad ending.
Gotcha.
So you had the Flash Thompson sad ending, and then the Spider-Man Punisher one is actually pretty open-ended as well.
Hmm. Fair enough.
Well, my What If experience was terrible, so...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not this book. Actually, I was kind of meh on the Thor book.
You're kind
of
meh.
There was something about the art that didn't quite get me, and I think that pushed me away from really enjoying it.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. It's just for some reason, it wasn't...
There's nothing catching about it.
No, there's a lot of artists that are doing similar things right now with referencing manga and utilizing speed lines for action, and I just don't think this artist nails it the same way. So.
Mm. Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. Well, you want to pop over to some Sherry?
Yeah. Next?
Anybody who's not me is pronouncing that name.
Oh, yeah. This is issue number one of Sherry. Written by Nnedi Okorafor. Okorafor? I don't know where the emphasis should go on that.
There's a lot of consonants and vowels in there that I didn't think went together.
It's one and one. It's half and half. And then this is the artist, Leonardo Romero.
Yay.
So,
From the first person, this is the one that always boggles my mind. It goes from the first person to, some run-of-the-mill name, and I always find that really interesting. I'm like, how do you do that?
I like Leonardo Romero.
I can honestly say, for looking at the cover and then actually going into the comic, it was probably a bit of a shell shock art-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the cover sucks, and the comic's amazing.
You don't like the cover?
I love the cover.
No, I think the cover is absolutely boring.
Fair enough. Well, I disagree.
I agree with Patrick. That never happens.
The interior art is fantastic to me. See, and master storytelling.
I don't know. It hits this point of really cartoony for me that's probably one of the reasons why I was like,
cartoony? We're going to have a weird discussion.
I like the iconism, especially the flashback sequence, too.
I think there's a level of simplification. This is not cartoony. This is definitely, it's a simplified style.
Iconic.
Sure.
Arguments can ensue.
Sure. We're not going to kid.
Yeah.
We should probably drop it because this book is actually really good.
Absolutely.
I went into it with an inappropriate mindset for reading it, though, because typically Black Panther stories are, very big and broad. You know, right now you have the intergalactic Empire of Wakanda going on.
Right.
Just literally, a galactic story. But this is super small and personal. What's the day in the life of the crown princess of Wakanda? Yeah. You know, what does she do all day?
Well, and it did some good reconciliation of where stories have been within the Black Panther universe to get us to a Shuri that is very similar to what we saw on film, which obviously was one of the breakout characters from Black Panther.
Yes.
But they talk about the fact that her hair has finally returned back to its color. Mm-hmm. And
oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, also, after Coates' last run with it.
And then they also explain what the hell is happening with the Galactic Empire of Wakanda, or at least that's the inference that we get, is that it was a science project to go out and that Shuri worked on that event. So
that's true. Can I say I love her? Like, every time she does, like, she turns in and out of birds. Like, yes. That's such a cool, like, her superpowers after she came back from, like, the Land of the Dead. It's just awesome.
it's a really funny dichotomy because she's flying around with the, like, the mechanical wings that she's made.
Yeah.
And then she's like, well, I guess I could just use my powers too.
Yeah, I know. Like, she literally can turn into a flock of birds and fly around.
I also like the bold choice of what they did artistically for
like
the flashback. Right? Very much. And there's like a certain heavenly quality to Shuri, so that makes total sense. Like, she's very ethereal at this point in time because of what the powers that she's been given.
Well, that makes sense just from the flashback that I got.
And it's like, it kind of makes her like the perfect like facsimile for Wakanda because she is like the tech genius and the traditional like force now.
The flashback sequence with the red, white, and gold colors, that's just it's beautiful. It is so like it's just telling that story and separating it and showing the relationship between Shuri and T'Challa and how she was viewed.
Also, I think like the choice of coloring in it, mm-hmm. like and the combination of the line work, like makes it feel like you're reading like some old like folklore kind of story, like
something written on like parchment that like sort of faded with the ink.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna get kicked, but I'm like, after you said that whole thing with Deadpool and Hakuna Matata, I'm like, God damn it, I can't stand that Lion King.
All you see here is ours.
This is Wakanda. Everything the light touches.
Okay, so interesting point going back to, like, the Wasp and too much feminism or whatever. When they came to the thing and they were like, yeah, we have a council of women because when the men are at war, like, we have to get together and figure stuff out. That's how you include, like, that kind of diversity or whatever. I don't know. It's very easy to do, but, like...
Natural storytelling.
Yeah, natural storytelling. Great job, Natty, for that one.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think... So are we in agreement that Okoye is always going to look like Danai Gurira now, like, for the rest of time?
What else are you going to do?
Right?
She was great. Like, every time I think I hear her voice, all right?
But when you said you were going to open Wakanda's borders, I thought...
Oh, maybe a Starbucks.
The Olympics? Maybe a Starbucks?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
just
And then, I guess lastly, but not leastly, while we have a couple more minutes here, we should talk about Spider-Gwen : Ghost Spider, issue number one.
Written by Seanan McGuire.
I guess it is a colon. I was like, are you not? No, he's right.
And art by Rosie Compay.
Okay, disclaimer. Okay. Read Spider-Geddon 2 first before you read this.
Or don't, and you can just read Ghost Spider and get things spoiled for you. It's fine.
Yeah, right, well, I don't think it was...
You don't need
I'm
to
not
read...
marred in continuity, so I come from
well,
that
no,
different
no, no,
perspective.
No, you don't need to read it. I'm just saying, if you don't want things spoiled for you in another story, read that first.
If you're reading Spider-Geddon, read Spider-Geddon number
there
2
first. There you go.
First.
That's the best way to put it.
I think I have the differing opinion this time, which is I was not interested in this.
I hurt me some Spider-Gwen, so you better back yourself up. I'm just kidding.
Use words, man. What's going on?
Carefully tread. I'm sorry. Spider-Ham.
Spider.
You know, I think, first of all, Spider-Ham. That's always, like, way too much for me, man. And then, secondly, just, like, from a storytelling perspective, I don't think that half of this comic was... I think the first half of this comic was unnecessary.
Until
they step through the portal and she goes into a different world, when the story starts. The rest of it is just like build up for the character. Which,
well, I think you're talking about something to reestablish continuity for people who've never read the character.
Yeah,
because
I haven't read too in depth in Spider-Gwen, and I didn't read the ending part of it. And I've been in jail. People know who I am.
Yeah,
I mean, that's true. But like, they could have included that in the story proper instead of setting off, like, the first half is like basically the epilogue to the last story, and then the second half of this comic is like the prologue to whatever this run is going to be. Like, it felt, it just felt like two different comics to me.
To me, it felt like this is our classic Marvel intro. So here, people who've never read Spider-Gwen, this is what she's sort of about. This is what her status is.
I don't necessarily
throw her into a story.
No, I got that, and I understood why they were doing it, and I can see why people who like the spider people and spider things would be, you know.
Well, that's the other thing is a lot of this was an ode to Spider-Man. Because reading some of the things, I was like, am I reading Spider-Man or Spider-Gwen?
And you know what? I went back and started looking at, like, Spider-Gwen history, and I think there is, like, a lot of the storytelling done with her was to sort of have a fresh take on the Parker mythology of somebody who kind of runs into the shit. Like, like, the shit follows them wherever they go, and... You know, it's the burden of being the spider totem. It seems like the world sort of falls apart around you and you have to pick yourself back up.
I mean, well, the thing is I will say the difference in her character is she can actually, like, for, I guess, people who don't know, and I'm assuming her costume is actually a symbiote.
I don't think it was originally, but yeah, there's definitely a page near the end where she's fighting the goblin.
Even you'll see it in the other thing too.
Yeah, because this definitely like there's something happening there.
Well, yeah. So and it's in Spider-Geddon too.
Spider-Geddon
that they actually say that her costume is a symbiote. And what originally wasn't. I don't know what happened from like in her back issues to where she, because I know at one point she was dealing with a symbiote.
Just ate some bad food and got a parasite, I guess.
Right. Okay. So, Patrick, then, will you read a second issue?
You know, I will pick it up.
Okay.
And because the second half prologue, it did kind of leave me with some, like good questions. But yeah, I don't have too high of hopes for it.
See, let's just say that. I'm like, ask more.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
Hoping that it continues on the sort of good storytelling.
I will say this: I want her to have
the movie
haircut.
Oh man, I really want her to have the movie ballet slippers. I just love that.
I thought she didn't have the movie ballet slippers in this one.
Mm-hmm. She has the chucks.
Does she?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
We talked about this a little bit on the previous episode.
I didn't know you said something, Brad, but I thought she had the slippers in this one.
She's got white toes.
Well, anywho, it's if you're, like I said, I think if you're at all inclined to, like, spider family stuff, this is definitely, like, right up your alley.
Spider-Gwen's costume is badass.
Spider-Gwen's costume might be one of the best costumes in, like, the past 5 years.
Yes. I agree, too.
And fun fact, Dan Slott did not want that costume.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's almost like
anywho.
That's the Chuck Taylor outline.
So before Nat and Kat get into an argument about shoes...
I will have this.
let's go ahead and sign off. Right. They're already gearing up for it. All right, let's say bye.
Bye.